I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice here in the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and of course, as you know, I'm always thrilled to be here. We have some interesting stuff going on today. I was trying to think about, you know, I want to talk about the world, the debates, the world of politics, the world of craziness that's going on, where we are as a country. So I brought in some interesting people here. We have Joe Pangaro, the attorney of record here for Chasing Justice. Joe, how are you?
Dad, I'm doing great. Glad to be back.
It's awesome to have you here. And we also have Jack Tague, my son Jack, who is brilliant and has written here for America Out Loud. Jack, how are you?
Happy to be here.
So, as I go through my topics, I'm thinking about a couple things. First of all, truesecuritydesign.com. We're going to start out with our commercial right in the beginning, because you need to go to truesecuritydesign.com. You need to take a look at what I'm offering as far as training, threat assessments for schools, businesses. We also do law enforcement training. But if you have a business out there, right now, 69% of businesses are not doing anything for their employees as far as it comes to de-escalation training or threat assessments for your building or for training in active shooter response. And the reality is 60% of active shooter incidents take place in businesses and places other than schools. So truesecuritydesign.com, give me a call, let us help you out. That's our commercial for this week. So I'm glad you guys are here. We've had a lot going on. We've had the debates. We have the political season is starting to take effect. We see some high-profile things going on out there in the world. How many police officers have now been shot and killed? It becomes such a daily occurrence now that we're not even really taking notice of it anymore. I mean, Lieutenant Randy Sutton, who's here on America Out Loud, Randy does a tremendous program, and Randy does a great thing for law enforcement. So I want you all to go take a look at Randy's program. And for my brother and sisters in law enforcement, it is tremendous. And of course, I always dance around when I start talking about other topics. So I'm going to try and stay focused. I have the fellas here, and we're going to talk about the players in the debate. Let's talk about that. So we saw the debate the other night, and everyone has called it a clown car. The clown car pulls up and all these people, 20 different candidates for president. I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing. You have a lot of different points of view. People are trying to come forward. They want to be president of the United States. They want to make their case to you, the American people. What is it that you find important? Jack?
Now, I don't think that there are 20 different opinions. I think there's one ideology, and it's really just seeing who can match up to that the best. So I think it's everyone that has the same ideas and the same viewpoints. It's just how far will they go to implement those things. That's how I view it.
Okay,
I think
what, it's a lot of the same. An example, anything?
I think a lot of the different questions they asked, everyone seemed to have the same answers. There didn't seem to be a whole lot of disagreement. It was just really arguing for who could answer the most radical thing in the fastest.
Right, so they don't like the police. They don't like ICE. They want to cut back on all that kind of stuff, right? Every single one of them. You notice, I saw a comment on one of the social media said, not one American flag up there on either debate.
Is that true?
I didn't see any flags. The pictures they showed me, I did not see American flags. I didn't hear about the wonder of America. I didn't hear about the power of America. I didn't hear about the decency of America at all when it came to these people.
That's actually shocking to me. It did not even occur to me, because you think you're running for president. One of the first things you do for the debate is you put that American flag on your lapel. Even if it's cheesy, even if it's corny, I'm actually shocked. It's not something that occurred to me. I'm shocked that no one put the American flag on their lapel.
Not only that, but, and we have to go back and look at the video to make sure nobody did, but there was no talk of America being a great place. There was no talking about the place that America has in the world that has changed the world for the better. It's America is a bad place. America is hard. The economy we have going right now, they're still talking about, well, the economy hasn't reached everyone. People are suffering. How many people have come off of welfare? How many people have come off of food stamps? which tells you that they're not suffering like they were before. They're actually feeding their family. So Kamala Harris, Kamala, we're all trying to figure out how to say her name. We want to be respectful and say it the right way, but no one's come out and said it. So I'm going to say Kamala. That's how it sounds to me. She made a pretty funny attack, and she's a prosecutor, so she's used to making commentary. And she said to Joe Biden, to the effect of, to all of them, they were all arguing, all the Democrats, she goes, hey, people don't want to see a food fight. They want to figure out how we're going to put food on their table. And of course, everyone in the audience cheered. There's plenty of food in America. There are plenty of people working now that weren't working before, that were on food stamps, that are now taking care of their families. What is the, why is there such a divergence, is I guess my question, in the view of the people on the left that America is so horrible and terrible? And like you say, Joe, you're shocked to see that nobody up there on the Democrat side displayed an American flag and their love of America. Why don't they love America? I don't get this. I'm kind of at a loss for that. So what other players did we see there?
Well, you know what, actually, Dad? I think it would be interesting if we just go around. There's three of us here. I think the real debates, when they really get started, there's going to be five or six people.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we go through, we each pick one person, and then we'll go around again, who we think is actually going to be left standing at the end of this. I mean, I didn't watch all the debates, but I watched enough of the debates to have an idea.
And you've seen the candidates in other
areas. And I've seen the candidates. I think that the fact that there's 20 of them is a signal they all think Donald Trump is vulnerable. I think a reflection of that, Hillary Clinton was obviously going to be the Democrat nominee last time around. You had 17 Republicans. Everybody thought, if I'm going to be president, it's going to be going against Hillary Clinton.
Sure.
I think that's what you're seeing on the Democrat side. I think if I'm going to be president, it's going against Donald
Trump. Okay, so I'm going to throw something out there right now. This is my theory, because I've been way ahead on this whole investigation against the president. I called this as an investigator over a year ago, that this was a nonsense. This was a faux thing, that this was a coup, and they were coming after him. I saw that as an investigator. I think a lot of these people that are running understand they're not going to beat Trump. They're looking at 2024, that they're going to come out of this as, boy, you ran against Trump and you lost because you couldn't beat him. But you're talking about four more years when the economy, it goes in cycles. So by the end of four more years of Trump, actually 6 years from now, the economy could start to see a little slowdown. We could see interest rates rise. There could be some event in the world that causes the economy to slow down, a big terrorist attack, something like that. And then these people would be the number one person to jump in when there is no Republican incumbent. And it's unknown Republicans against now who we know these Democrats are. So I'm guessing that a lot of these people are figuring they want to do the best they can, run against Trump. They don't expect to win, but in 2024, they'll be the number one candidate coming back. That's my take on this whole thing. So go ahead.
All right. So Jack, we'll start with you. Pick one person. Well, let's go around. One person who you think, if it gets down to six, who you think would wind up in or should wind up in that six people.
I think the obvious one has got to be Joe Biden. I don't know if he's going to be able to beat Trump. Going against Harris in the debate the other night, it didn't look like he was that good at responding to aggression. But I do think he's definitely got to be in.
He's got to be in the six
for the nomination.
Okay, so let's look at Joe Biden for a minute. Now, from everything that I know about Joe Biden throughout his whole career, he's never done anything dramatic. He's always been the go-to guy in Delaware. He's not been technically a bad man, but he's never been. He has nothing to really show. He was Obama's guy when Obama needed a running mate, and he was a good vice president for President Obama. But there's nothing particular about Joe Biden other than he's an old school kind of guy, and now they're coming up with all his stuff because he's been there 40 years. All the things that, you know, when the world was different, he had different opinions, and those opinions now don't cut it now. When he talks about, I got along with the racist guys, now they're saying, you got along with the racist guys, why didn't you attack the racist guys? So that means you're bad. So Joe Biden, go ahead. Joe, what do you think?
You know what? I'll leave another obvious one off the table. I'm going to go with, I think he's going to be in the six. I'm going to say Mayor Pete. Mayor Pete Buttigieg, or Buttigieg. Mm-hmm. I think he's exceptionally articulate. I think, as silly as it sounds, he has an excellent name where you say, oh, I like Mayor Pete. Mm-hmm. I think that's catchy. I think he's smart. He's photogenic. And he has done well when he's spoken. I think if you are just looking at it from an objective perspective, who is a candidate that could really be there at the end, Mayor Pete's going to be one of those six.
Okay. No. That's interesting. Go ahead, Jack.
I agree that he definitely came off much more articulate than all the other candidates. But he doesn't seem like he's very strong. And if you're going to be going against someone like President Trump, I think having to be that aggressive, he just seems kind of wobbly. That's just from looking at him mm-hmm. at the debates. But I don't really know many of his points of view. I don't know much about him.
Let me give you what I saw about him. He is an articulate guy. He's good with a comeback. He seems that he can handle himself in the public domain, which I think is really great. But right after, he had to stop in the middle of the campaign and go back to South Bend where there was a police shooting. And he had a community meeting to try and deal with it. And the people did not want to hear the facts about the shooting. They just didn't like that a white police officer shot and killed a black man. And they attacked this guy. And he looked very weak in responding. And there's a couple of things there. Maybe, because he's young. The guy is young. He's only in his 30s. You're in your 30s, Joe, but I think you're a little bit different. But he's a mayor of a big town. But I think the reason he came off looking weak is because it's his first time on a national stage. How difficult, in the middle of all of this, to come up with such a controversial thing as a white cop shooting a black man in America. That causes huge problems anywhere. And he had to go back and take care of his town. And unfortunately, he tried to control that meeting, and it didn't work out. The community shouted over the top of him. They screamed and hollered. And he was scared to death to say the wrong thing because he's running for president. Now, had he not been running for president, he might have handled the meeting differently. He might have handled it better than what he looked. But because I think in the back of his mind was, if I say the wrong thing, if I do the wrong thing, I'm ruining my presidential campaign. I think that probably affected how he handled that. I think he had a lot of compassion for the community that lost someone. But I think a lot of law enforcement officers were looking at him as a potential president. Like, Trump is very pro-law enforcement. Obama would never light up the White House blue, and Trump has done it several times to show support for law enforcement. Mayor Pete, and I do like the name. I think that's cool, Mayor Pete. It's fun. It's close. You feel like you can connect with him. He didn't back up his cops and go, let's figure out what happened here. If the cops were right in shooting a guy, no matter what color he was, that's what happened. You don't fight law enforcement. You don't come at them with weapons. You don't do bad things against the cops because you get shot. And if he knew the facts, if it turned out it was a bad cop, he should have said that. But to just have to dance around the issue because he doesn't want to say the wrong thing, that looks weak. You have to just you have to call it as you see it.
You know what I'll say, and then we'll move on to Dad. I'll let you make your next prediction. You guys might not be wrong in your assessments, but if you don't think Mayor Pete's going to be there at the end, I think you're nuts. I think he is articulate enough and he is slick enough that if we are underestimating him because he had a bad press conference mm-hmm. or a bad appearance, I think that's a mistake. I think Mayor Pete is a very talented politician. I think he's going to be one of the six in the end.
Joe, that's a good opinion. I'm glad you have that. So me, who do I think is going to be there at the end? I want to say Kamala, however we say her name, Harris, because she has a lot of attributes that her party thinks is important. First of all, I find a lot of the Democrat candidates to probably be nice, fun people. I thought Obama was probably a good guy. He was obviously a great father and a good husband. I think he was a decent person. It's his policies that are just not fit for America. And I think all of the candidates on the Democrat side would destroy our country over time. So who do I think would still be there at the end? We said Joe Biden, we said Mayor Pete, and I'm looking at this and I'm saying, there's a lot of...
And I'm not saying you're picking your favorite president. I'm saying if people replay this episode, once mm-hmm. there are six people on the debate stage, mm-hmm. who is on the debate stage
That's
with Mayor
I'm
Pete and Joe Biden?
And you know, I don't think you're either one of you are wrong on your picks at the moment. Here we are at this point in time. As I look at the group, I like Kamala because I think she's a strong woman. She has a lot of attributes that her party is going to think is important. She's a radical, she's a woman, and she's an African-American. And that's important to them right now. It doesn't matter anything else other than identity politics. And she's well spoken. She's, you know, she's an attractive candidate.
And I think you're right. If Kamala Harris is not in the final six, what's the phrase? I'll eat my shoes. I think I think Kamala Harris is going to be in there. Jack, who do you think is?
All right. I think he's actually declining in relevance and popularity, but I think he's definitely going to be able to carry himself to the top six as Bernie Sanders.
I was waiting for somebody to say.
Ah, Bernie. But
I definitely think he's kind of dropping down in relevance. I think, especially looking at the debates, he definitely wasn't as prevalent as he was previously. But I don't know. I could be wrong.
So let's look at that. So Bernie, who is a declared socialist, he comes out last time against one candidate, Hillary Clinton. And he lays out his socialist agenda. I mean, he lays it out there. He's the first one that came forward and said, I am a socialist. America should be socialist. And here's what I believe. And a lot of young people bought into that. Now, we know that the election was fixed against him. The whole Democrat Party, it was Hillary's turn. And mm-hmm. they cheated him out of his nomination. Whether or not he would have done better than Trump, I don't know. I think America was in the right place to say, we're done with that. Trump answered a question we all needed to have. But the fact that Bernie is not the leader right now tells you that you have to look at the entire party. They're more radical than he was in 2016. He got them to be radical. They're even more radical than he was. So that kind of leaves him behind.
And I'll tell you, I have a friend who is just to the left of Stalin, as he puts it. And he is convinced that Bernie, if he does not get it, is going to burn the party to the ground.
But Bernie says, he's talking about now going third party.
And this is exactly what my friend said. He goes, Bernie, bit of a grouch. Let me just say he's a little older. He's a bit of a grouch. He had a really good claim to winning the nomination last time. Trump was an incredibly beatable candidate, no matter what you think of him. Trump was a very beatable candidate. So Bernie was leading into this process thinking he had a W in his back pocket. Mm-hmm. He was up by 30 points before Biden jumped into the race. And out of nowhere, the bottom dropped out. If you have a grouchy guy who thought he was going to be president and the bottom drops out, he might start swinging on his way down. And so a friend of mine, it's interesting to say, goes, if Bernie's dropping out, or if Bernie starts to lose, he thinks he's going to burn to the ground. He's going to burn the whole party to the ground.
And he might. And we're going to close out this segment with a couple of thoughts that I have. So,
oh, well, can I just give my pick? And then we'll give your last pick.
Go ahead.
I think it's going to be, my pick is Andrew Yang. I think Andrew Yang is going to be in the
You think he's going to be there?
I think he'll be there.
Mr. Income for Everybody?
Yeah, interesting. $1,000 a month.
I think Andrew Yang's going to be in, he's going to be the number five of the six. That's my dark horse.
Okay. So my closing comments here in segment one, I have to say this when I look at all of this. Trump has a potty mouth. Trump says inarticulate things. Trump tweets things that he shouldn't tweet. The reason that he was elected president is because it transcends all of that. Every one of us have said potty mouth things we're not proud of. Every one of us have said stupid things. The fact that he reached out and said, I am not a Washington politician, and I'm going to do things the right way, and I'm going to bring the power of the government back to the American people, we the people, is the reason he was voted into office. And that's the reason I believe he's going to win re-election. Whether you like him or not, the majority of Americans out here are tired of the politicians and the political class who play games with us, treat us like we don't matter, say one thing to us and do another. Trump's not that guy. He's a unique individual that came along. He's doing what he says he's going to do, even if he says some inappropriate things. He's leading the country well. We're in better shape today than we were 4 years ago. There's no doubt about it. So, hey, on Chasing Justice, we're here. We want to learn about all sides. We want to talk about everything. Every opinion is valid. So remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. We'll be back in a minute with segment two.
The Out Loud Perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
can ask you to go to thewoundedblue.org. That's www.thewoundedblue.org. That is the website for the organization that is the National Association for Injured and Disabled Police Officers. It is a support organization for these men and women who have given so much in the line of duty. We desperately need your help to raise money to get this movement going. And if you are a GoFundMe-er, go to GoFundMe, look up The Wounded Blue, and you can give there as well. But check it out, please, and also check out our film, The Wounded Blue, on Amazon.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chasing Justice here in the America Out Loud Radio Network. Here we are in round two. Now, I like to bring people in to talk to people about things, so today I have two very special guests for Chasing Justice here. And first of all, we have, to my right, we have the lawyer of record for Chasing Justice, my son Joe Pangara, who is the attorney of record for Chasing Justice. How are you, Joe?
Hey, Dad, it's good to be back. It's been far too long.
Yes, it is. And you know what? Everybody texts me. They love your disorder in the court. So you know what? We're going to get to a disorder in the court, and we're going to talk to our attorney of record. Also with us this afternoon, we have my son, Jack Tague. Now, Jack has been involved with America Out Loud because Jack wrote an article about civility, and many of you read that article and sent me texts, emails, and Twitters, how much you loved that article. You couldn't believe that this kid at the time, at 15, wrote that article. Now he's 16. He's even smarter than he was then. So, Jack, how are you?
Excellent to be here. How are you doing?
Very good. Now, the reason that I have my kids on, because people have sent me, Joe, why do you have your kids on? They're cool and all, but why do you have them? And I'll tell you why. First of all, I like to bring on, like, my son Jack, who's 16 now, my daughter Marisa, who's going to be 20 years old. The reason I bring on these young people is because they are going to inherit the world. They are the ones that are going to take over the world very, very shortly. So understanding how they see America, how they see the world, how they see our political system and what's going on, I think has great value for all of us to hear what's going on with how young people view this stuff. Having Joe on, Joe, how old are you now?
33, Dad.
33. I can't believe I have a kid who's 33. I am way too good looking to have a kid who's 33 years old. But the fact that I have a son who's 33, he is actually the next power base that takes over the world. You know, I'm 57, and we are at our peak right now, those in our 50s. We are in control of everything. This is our most earning potential years. This is the most valuable time of our lives financially. And the next group behind us are those in their 30s. So I like to have Joe on. Not only that, he's an outstanding attorney. He really is. And all my kids are smarter than me. They are much more articulate than I am. And their thoughts of things are really, really excellent. So, and that's why I bring them on. Because you know what? I think it's valuable to all of us in the Chasing Justice audience to hear what young people have to say. Now, granted, I have a interesting cadre of political points of view in my house. Joe and Jack and Alex are a little bit more conservative than my daughter Marisa. We've had Marisa on here many times. She is a brilliant young woman, and she has brought up some tremendous things that give us pause. We need to think about the other side's point of view because, like I've said many times here in Chasing Justice, I have lots of family and friends who are on the left, who are liberal, and I think they believe in doing what's best in the world. I just don't necessarily agree how we get there. So I think that's important.
And Dad, what I'll jump in with that is I think it's really important. There's a distinction with how you put the word bad into the sentence. Sometimes there are people with bad ideas, and then there are bad people with ideas. And I think it's important to understand, just like you do, you bring people on with the other perspective. Maybe they're people with bad ideas, but they're not bad people with ideas.
Joe, that's 1,000%. You know, how many people do we know in our lives, personally, in our family, who are liberal and to the left? They're not bad people. They want to do the best things for people. The problem is that from our point of view, who are more to the right, we don't quite get how they're going to get us to where they need to go. So with that being said, that's why I put my kids on the radio, because I think they're really awesome. So we have Joe, the attorney of record here for Chasing Justice.
Ooh, I've been waiting for this, Daddy-O.
And this is actually awesome. We like, disorder in the court because This is your court system. This is things that are on the books in America, and this is what we're paying for. So, Joe, what are some interesting cases going on out there?
Okay, so this is the first one, and I have a couple of questions for you guys, but I'll set it up for you. A man won a lawsuit because he slipped on a greasy floor as a result of, wait for it, someone walking through the bar he was in wearing pork chops for shoes.
Okay, so.
There's a lot to unpack there. Yes, I recognize that.
All right, so fashion sense aside, he was wearing pork chops as footwear.
As footwear.
Okay, now Lady Gaga wore, and she's one of my favorite singers. I couldn't believe what a beautiful voice this young woman has. But she wore a meat suit. A suit right. made out of meat.
Sure.
And she actually wore it to an event, and it was actually, like, ribeyes.
Now, I'm sure she paid someone behind her to sweep up all the grease, so this thing doesn't matter.
Right, because the blood-sucking lawyer who figured out the pork shoes case, she's like, I pork shoes Johnny, I've got to be aware of. So she had someone covering her liability there.
So that's very interesting. So in this particular case, someone, not the person who sued,
Lady Gaga wasn't involved,
walked through the bar with pork chops for shoes.
For shoes.
And they fell down.
So my first question to you is, this is an honest question. So we know it's not going to be like when you sue McDonald's and you get $15 million because the coffee was hot. We know it's not that. Okay? This was a local dive bar. Guy slips and he sues the bar. How much money do you think he gets? Let's just put out there first. How much money do you really think he gets for slipping because someone wore pork chops?
I can't even finish.
Okay. For shoes at the bar.
So the first thing I would have to determine was, what were his injuries? Did he break an arm, the leg? Did he knock his teeth out? Now, it depends on where in the country he is. Depends on how many teeth he may have knocked out.
Sure. Sure. Now, Maybe none.
Yes. I have two numbers. I think one, how much I think he should get. And that's at least $10. I think $10. And you get the experience of walking behind a man with pork chops for shoes.
Or was it a woman with pork chops for shoes?
Sure, that's an Instagram. You're going to get at least 100 likes on that. That was worth the damage. But
how
he
much,
broke his arm.
How much I think he got? I think he got $15,000.
$15,000. Remember, it was a broken arm, pork chop for shoes. Dad, go.
I'm going to say he got $250,000 against the insurance of the bar. And then the bar was sanctioned because, you know, you walk in, shoes, shirt, and shorts required.
Right.
I don't know if they had proper signage that says, no meat for footwear. I think they misaligned their setup.
All right, so the answer to the question, actually, I can't believe it. Jack was the closest without going over. This guy got $33,600 for slipping in the grease.
And what was the ruling?
Well, here's the bonus. The ruling was negligence. The bar was negligent. Yes. In allowing this to happen.
What other cases have you got here?
All right, well, I have a couple of good cases, but actually I wanted to flip it over to a crime now, because you know, this is when we say, yo, I'm going to go to Washington and I'm going to make Washington work. Well, what is Washington actually doing? So I think this is, I always like to do this segment because it gives you a chance to see, this is what it means when you're sending people to Washington to compromise. So Chapter 7 of the U.S. Code, Section 2149 and 9 of the Federal Register, 2.132D. You ready for this, Jack? Make it a federal crime for a cat exhibitor to get cats from a person who's supposed to have a cat dealing license.
The first question, what if you're not supposed to have a cat dealing thing? Can you then deal cats wildly?
No, are you an illicit cat dealer?
You were on the force a long time. How many big busts did you have? I mean, I imagine it would be a career case to bust a guy who was selling cats without a cat dealing license.
I don't even have an answer for that. I mean, you know, I guess in rural Pennsylvania where they have like puppy mills, and that's a big deal because you know how much we love animals here. We have rescues and all that. So if someone's improperly dealing puppies or whatever, or cats, I think that would be something that would be high on your radar. So my brother and sisters that are out there that do that, good for you. Go after those bad puppy mills. But I never came across a case where someone was illegally dealing in cats. Right. Which, of course, is double entendre there. I won't go into, but who's dealing with cats?
If you have a cat dealing license, please email the show. Let us know what the process was, because I got to imagine it's a lot of red tape where finally you say, you know what? I'm just going black market cat dealing. I'm not going to deal with all of these forms and these IDs. I'm just going on the black market.
It's a cat. I mean, come on. It's a cat. So that's interesting. But I think that's that goes back along. How many of these laws, and this is what disorder in the court actually brings up to us, and this is the serious side of this, is that we laugh about these things. We find them really funny because who would imagine that these kind of things are actually on the books, that they're laws that... that the lawyers have to deal with, that people have to deal with. And that's not to, and believe me, because I know what people are saying, it's not to talk about, you know, people improperly deal with animals. You know, that's not us. You know how much I love animals. But who would think that all of these things would go on? Like kumquats, and you have to have rules for that, and you got to, I guess there's a rule for everything, right?
Is you know what I heard somebody say, and I think this is really interesting. They said, everywhere in the world except America, they wonder, they say, hey, can I do this or not? I wonder if there's a law that allows me to do it. In America, they look at it as, hey, I wonder if there's a law that is stopping me from doing it. Otherwise, I'm just going to go ahead and do it. But it's interesting to see over time, they've built up a lot of these rules. No, you can't just sell cats to a cat exhibitor without a dealer license. Are you crazy?
That is an interesting perspective. In America, we wonder if there's something that prevents us from doing it because, you know, it's kind of, we started out as the Wild West. You could do anything. Yeah. And we've had to come up with laws to regulate people's behavior because people will do the most ridiculous things.
But it's interesting. It is an interesting way to look at the world, how freedom and how liberty shape the perspective. In America, it's, is there anything stopping me from doing it? In the whole rest of the world, it's, is there anything that allows me to do it? No. I do think it's an interesting way to look at the world.
It really is.
I will say one thing. What animal is not on a list that I could then try and start peddling? You see, and then I could get the law made.
Now you sound un-American. The real way to look at it is, who's going to stop me from dealing these animals without a license?
Joe, that interesting question. You know, I fly on planes a lot now. And I see a lot of people that, like, never before did you have strange animals on an airplane. Now you have, like, comfort animals.
Right.
So I don't know if you know anything about this area of law. I know recently people have had, like, comfort goats, comfort pygmy pigs, comfort dogs, comfort birds, comfort snakes. One guy tried to go on with a comfort alligator.
Right.
And they drew the line on that. You can't have a comfort alligator because it could bite someone's leg off, I suppose was the thought. But, like... have we gone too far, do you think, with that, with comfort animals? I mean, does it make you comfortable to have a iguana on the airplane with you?
I said I am going to bring a comfort attack pelican to sit on my lap as I go through. You know what I think? It's a very interesting thing, but I also think you'll see, at least we have, there are some airlines that are now banning comfort animals altogether.
They are.
And I think that's a value add where, hey, if you want to bring your comfort dog on the plane, that's fine, but you can't take airline X. And if you want to go on a plane without any comfort animals, airline X is
so
yours.
So that's actually an American kind of a thought where the market will serve the market. But isn't there something there that says, yeah, but the only airline that serves me is airline X, and now they don't allow my comfort animal and I can't fly? Isn't that a lawsuit?
You know what? I think you're going to see these things, and they work themselves out over a long period of time, is what it usually takes. But the free market really does have you know, when you allow it to operate without inhibition, it really does find a way for everything. If there's someone who wants to pay to not have to be on a plane with 1,000 dogs, maybe you'll pay a premium, and maybe that'll be your airline. And maybe you'll have to take, you know, one or two layovers to stay on that airline to avoid all the dogs, but you'll do it because that's the value to you. Versus if you want to bring your dog on, there's four airlines to pick from, and that's what you place a value on, is bringing your dog or your comfort pelican or your alligator.
Do you see how we come around the horn here, ladies and gentlemen, here having these fellas on talking about our disorder in the court segment? It's very interesting, and we start out with some funny stuff. But it always ends up coming back to, you know, this is our system. This is the system of laws we have. It's really very interesting. Can you bring a comfort pet shark? And somebody have to wipe it down while it's sitting in the chair with you? I don't know. But we have a system that allows us to at least bring our points of view forward. We make our case in court, lawyers defend us, and then a judge will make a decision. And I think, Joe, your position there was really important, your point that you made, that other countries wonder what they're not allowed to do, and America goes, hey, what am I allowed to do? Because we have so much more freedom here. So thanks for joining us on this particular segment, and it was nice to have Joe here and Jack, and we'll be back in a minute with round three on Chasing Justice.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Lieutenant Joe Pangaro here for Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Here we're back here for round three, and I've asked Joe, the attorney of record, Pangaro, and Jack to stay with me for round three because we wanted to talk about, since I had them here, and I really like that last segment. You know, disorder in the court, Joe, is always fun because it's ridiculous stuff and we make good fun of it. But like I said, having Jack on, having Maurice on, having other young people on is important because, you know, you people are the ones filling the void behind my group of people. And a lot of my listeners are my age and younger. And where you're going to go or the battles you're going to fight are important. We see now that a lot of my articles that I've written for the past 4 or 5 years have had a theme behind them. And the theme was we were approaching the crossroad. We were approaching this change in America, this entire shift in how America was being viewed. I got to be honest with you, while I saw the crossroad coming and I saw the potential dangers we face as a country, I never expected that socialism would be a part of that. I really never did. I thought it was just going to be an attack on the traditional values of America. I thought it was going to be an attack on the moral underpinnings of America, the religious underpinnings of America, because we see how they're attacked constantly. Because if you have a religious basis for the way you deal with society and you remove that, then anything goes. So attacking our religious underpinnings, doesn't matter what religion you are, as long as it's, you know, about doing the right thing and controlling people from doing the worst of human endeavors. I guess that's what religion tries to control us from. When you take that away, now no holds barred. Anything kind of goes. So I found that interesting.
If I can just jump in there, Dad.
Of course you can.
I think it's interesting, a student of history myself. After they signed the Constitution, so the story goes, Ben Franklin was walking through the streets of Philadelphia, and a random citizen stopped him and said, "So, we have a republic now." And he turned and said, "For as long as you can keep it." And so you saying you were surprised that socialism has come around to be popular within the United States, I think the founders, at least from that story, the founders always envisioned that the structure that they created would constantly be under attack, and it would be up to the people of America to keep it for as long as you can. So it's an interesting context to have as you're going into your intro here. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No,
but just the idea that right from the very jump, they saw this crumbling as soon as it could. And so we have a republic now. As long as you can keep it was from the very first day the Constitution
and that's
was signed.
Very interesting, Joe, because a couple of things that come up to my mind. One of the themes that I've pushed out on AmericaOutloud.com, you can go back and read a lot of my articles out of there, I talk about the default position of humanity. When we think about people, for as long as there's been a recorded history of human beings, we have lived under tyranny. We've lived under the strongman, the king, the czar, the pharaoh, whatever it is, and they've controlled the population. You've had these delineated individuals that are the rulers, and everyone else is the followers. And that is always the default position of humanity, whether we like it or not, and that's a deeper question. But when I look at this and I say America was the sea change in that. America, that first line of, we the people, the government serves us, we don't serve the government. That is so important, and that's not taught in our schools. Kids don't understand that. They don't hear about it. Instead, they hear about, social justice, and they hear about, the rights of everyone, the downtrodden, which is all important. We have to worry about those people, but we're getting away from who we are as America that made us unique, that made us different than anything else that's come across mankind.
And I'll actually go to throw on top of that. For all of those generations and throughout all of history, the merchants were considered really the underclass of society. Whereas in a capitalist society, the businesses that are providing services to the people, I mean, you look at the 1920s, Andrew Carnegie gave a loan to the United States government. A businessman was one of the more powerful men in the country. You look at, Mark Zuckerberg or whoever's running Walmart. You look at whoever's running the big companies of today. They're very powerful. They're very respected in this culture where it's a service culture. But throughout all of time, it was the tyrants running things and the people providing services and businesses and products to the masses were looked down upon. That was the lowest class. And in America, you have this capitalism, this idea of, the businesses, however much you can provide is how successful you can get. So it really was a complete flip on everything that society had been doing for all of time.
And I think that's the bigger point. That is what that is what makes America unique. That is what makes us different than every other society. Not better. I'm not going to, you're better. No, nobody says we're better. We have a better take on human interaction. Capitalism has allowed more people to rise from their station in life, wherever it may be. My station, I came from nothing. My father died early. I had nothing. I've made what I made because America allows me to do that. I can move through the system based on my hard work, based on what I'm willing to invest in my time. I heard a thing the other day, it was pretty funny. They said, they're talking about the income inequality. Income inequality. It's not fair that the head of McDonald's makes 2,000 times more than the hamburger flipper. And two things come to mind. First of all, it's a private company. So what the head of the company makes is nobody's business whatsoever. And nobody's holding those employees there with a gun saying, you have to flip hamburgers. But the other side of that whole thing is when you look at that, you say, you have opportunity here. You don't have anywhere else. Now, I'm not a Mark Cuban. I didn't come up with one of these gigantic companies. But I could. If I came up with an idea that people are willing to buy and pay for, I could become that next guy. At 57 years old, I could be a gadrillionaire. Jack, you're 16. You come up with an idea, you could be a gadrillionaire in America if you provide a service that people want.
And that's what they said Henry Ford at the time where everyone was starting to make cars. Henry Ford was the guy who figured out, I can't get really rich until I can make a car that my workers can afford. It's the same reason, we're looking at a big flat screen TV here. Flat screen TVs, when they first came out, were $4,000, $5,000. Now you can get them for $200-some bucks. Everybody can have one. Mm-hmm. But it's the businesses that are creating and inventing and innovating and designing and putting out products that people want. You can only be as successful as you are able to benefit the mass, like the masses, essentially. Right. You're creating products people want, and that's how you succeed.
And that's open to anybody. Because, go ahead, Jack.
And I think a lot of people focus on the inequality, like CEO makes this much more, but I think they're missing the whole point of everyone is getting richer throughout time. Like, we are in the 1/10 of 1/10 of 1% of the richest people in all of history, you know? And that's everyone in America. Everyone in America right now are the richest people in the world. And the poorest people in America just barely meet the poverty standards of the rest of the world, and I think a lot of people don't see that. They just see the inequality, but they miss how excellent everyone has it relative to all people of all time.
And I think you're right. And studies have been done, and those are poo-pooed or put down, because when you say that people in poverty live better than here in America than they do anywhere else, that's a horrible statement because they're living in poverty. But the reality is everybody has a cell phone. People have a car. They have air conditioning. They have an apartment. Now, not everyone. Of course, you've got to qualify everything so you're politically correct. Not everyone. Some people are really down on their luck, and that's where we need to help them. But when it came to this whole thing of income equality, I heard a great statement the other day, and I wish I could remember who said it. They go, well, income equality, don't we also have enthusiasm inequality? Don't we have hard work inequality? Don't some people work really, really hard compared to other people? Well, if those other people, it's inequitable. How come Joe, you as an attorney, you work 80, 90 hours a week? You know, I run a business trying to keep people safe, and I work 80, 90 hours a week. And they say, well, you guys are at the top of the financial thing. I work 80, 90 hours a week. If I worked 30 or 40 hours a week, I'd be much lower socioeconomically. But where's the income gap there? I work hard to earn what I earn. You earn what you earn, right?
Right. And not only that, but the service you're providing is something that people want. You're helping other people. If people didn't want the school security programs that you're offering, it wouldn't matter how much time you're working, you wouldn't be doing well. It's because you're providing a service. The only way you're doing well is because you're providing a service that people want. You can't succeed unless you're benefiting other people, just by the nature of the beast. Or otherwise, they would go to other businesses, they'd go to other companies, they'd spend their money in other places. There's only so many entertainment dollars or business dollars or investment dollars any one person has, and they're making a choice in where to spend them. And if you're providing a service or a product that people want to spend their limited dollars on, good. They're getting a benefit from it, and you're getting a benefit from it.
Now, I heard somewhere, I forget where the analogy was used, but it's that money is physical proof that you did something for someone else. And so that's why we use money. It's like a certificate that says, oh, I went out and I did something for someone else, and now this is proof of that. Now I get something.
That's interesting, Jack. And I've heard people say that CEOs, you know, people who, you make so much money that you can't spend it in 1,000 lifetimes. Why do you not just stop working? And say part of it is just the drive of creating something of significant value to society. You know, Steve Jobs didn't stop at the iPod, and he probably could have. He could have stopped at the Mac, but he was addicted to that idea of creating products that are important to society.
Right. Look at Mark Zuckerberg. He's a young guy. He's 32, 33 years old. He's your age, Joe. And he's worth $154 billion. Does he ever have to work another day? No, he could just go, you know what? I'm going to go live on my 37 islands. Why doesn't he? Because he wants to do more. It's not about greed. This is where people that don't understand corporations and they put down, you know, last night we listened to how many people going round and round and round, Jack. You watched the debate, which I thought was interesting. And all they did was attack these companies, attack them. These corporate people, we got to go after them. We have to 70% tax rate they want against these corporations. That will drive these corporations out of business or they'll leave our shores. You know, poor people don't give you jobs. Rich corporations give you jobs. What did you think of the debate as a young person?
I think generally the debate wasn't a particularly good showing for anyone because I think it's really just a contest of how woke you can be. So who can say the most radical thing and then have everyone applaud it? And so it's really just a contest of who can be more to the left. And I think they're leaving behind all the people that wouldn't normally vote for them because of how far they're trying to go to look like they're in good graces with their other very elite friends and to the media.
So did any of the things that they talked about, now you watched it, which I thought was great that you watched it, as a young person, did anything that they were talking about ring a bell with you and go, you know what, that's the way our country should go? Free healthcare, free education, free. Does that mean anything to you?
I don't really think so, but I think what really concerned me was all these things that should, that could warrant a more nuanced debate was just kind of accepted. And it was, I think one of the questions was, would you deport someone who came here illegally if that was their only offense? And I don't think anyone said that they would. And so that seems like a fairly complex issue. And there was no discussion at all. That was just agreed upon. Same as giving free health care to anyone who comes here illegally. That was just agreed upon by everyone there, and I think that's a very complicated thing for everyone to just back off and say, that's a given at this point.
And if I can jump in with that, that was a point that I saw a lot of, was free this, free that. I think it's important to realize, and Jack, let me know if you've heard any of this in school before, but there's limited resources, no matter what we're talking about. If we're talking about healthcare, there's limited doctors' time, there's limited machines, there's limited nurses' time, et cetera, et cetera. You can only distribute those resources in two ways. You can price it or you can ration it. So when you're talking about socialism, it's not free healthcare, everyone gets it exactly as they want. It's like, well, if we're taking away the pricing mechanism, then we're rationing. And then you have some bureaucrat you've never met deciding when you get X, Y, and Z. And I don't know if that's something that's really been explained to young people, is there's only two ways to allocate resources, pricing or rationing. So when you say we don't like pricing of things, we're benefiting a certain group, I don't think there's a lot of discussion or a lot of thought about the fact that if you're not pricing, you're rationing, and you're having a bureaucrat ration it out for you.
Joe, I think that's a brilliant point, because a couple of shows ago, I talked about my trip over to Europe, and everything that people were suffering under the EU, under the rules of the EU, the loss of their jobs, the loss of their careers, everything was, well, we get free health care. And then it turns out, in the long run, they're not actually getting free health care. They're getting a vision of free health care. And then there were shows on TV that we don't see here in America. There were shows over there about the national health system failing, that it's failing everyone who's involved. We don't hear that. In America, we hear, oh my God, it's great, it's the best thing in the world, because our political people that are of that bent want to drag us to that. We're not hearing the truth. Over there, they were actually doing like 2020 TV shows about the national health system failing everyone who has a real problem, because it's so expensive, that, and they ration it. Because right. That's the only choice they have.
It sounds great when you think we're removing the price of this product. It's like, oh, that's great. Well, that doesn't mean there's unlimited amounts of this product. Now we're moving the price. Now we have to ration what is there. You can't just say free Toyotas for everyone. Well, there's only so many in the world. Like, I mean, right. Just as an example, not everyone's going to get a Toyota. We're going to ration them out. We're going to give them to, at first glance, whoever the bureaucrats' friends are that want Toyotas. You know, you can either price or you can ration. But there's only two ways to distribute resources.
I think if we then make it so the government is paying for all healthcare, there's going to be very little incentive for innovation, because there's not going to be a whole lot of money in medical innovation. Also, there's probably not going to be a whole lot of money in being a doctor. And I think that it would go the same way as teaching is. Teachers aren't paid very well. Fortunately, we still have a lot of teachers, but that's because they don't need 12 years of very expensive schooling to be a teacher. If you have a doctor who's not getting paid very well, they're not going to spend the 12 best years of their life training to then go sit in an office and be forced.
Jack, you're 100% right. I heard an example today, and this is where we'll close out. Somebody said you have a neurosurgeon in New York City who works very hard, highly skilled, lots of years of training. When you have a brain tumor or a spine tumor, you want that doctor to operate on you to save your life. So he makes $1 million a year. Under the Democrats' plan that they're talking about now, they would tax him 70%. So their $1 million income would go down to $300,000. Then you have New York City tax and state tax, another 6 or 8, 10%. So now you got a neurosurgeon who's working on your brain making $240,000. and he has to pay school loans, and he has to live a lifestyle. How long do you think those neurosurgeons, he or she, are going to stay in New York? They're going to flee and go somewhere where they can actually make their money. You can't get the best by controlling it. And this is what's lost on people's minds. I get that it's expensive. But when something happens and you want the best, sometimes in healthcare, you have to pay for it. Because you know what? You get a disease, you die. We are living in a world, in a time, when you can go to a doctor who can cure you. But it costs money to do that. You don't just get to do it for free. We're kind of lost on that.
And just button up on that, with the pricing or rationing, if you price it, there's a universe, no matter what you put the price at, where I can achieve it. I can sell my house. I can take out a loan. I can do whatever. If it's priced, I can get it. If it's rationed, I have to hope I am given it. So right. That, I think, is the difference, is you can secure it for yourself if it's priced. If it's rationed, you just have
you
to
have
hope
no
the
control.
You have to hope the wheel spins in your favor.
That's like how old are you? You don't get a hip replacement because you're 68. It's not worth giving it to you.
Right.
That's not right. So, ladies and gentlemen, I think this has been an awesome discussion here with Joe Pangaro, the attorney of record for Chasing Justice, and Jack Pangaro, genius and leader of the future. So, thank you for joining us on Chasing Justice. We will see you next time. And remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem.